It is we to you all for the support you've given us. We certainly are not worthy of any particular support from you. You've been more than gracious to us in providing the needs that we have and sending letters of encouragement and things to help us along, and we love you for it. And we've missed seeing folks back here, but we thank this congregation for continuing to be faithful in the support. Before I ever did anything like this, several years ago, in fact, I recall sitting in this office over here and discussing men who we were supporting from this congregation in far parts of the world. And I remember at least one saying something to the effect that when he went to the mailbox, he was unsure, a little afraid, because he thought a church might have sent a letter to cut him off. And so as we went overseas, we wondered if the churches, different churches supporting us, some we didn't even know the people there, we wondered if they would be faithful or if we should be fearful going to the mailbox. And we've not had to fear one moment. Our needs have been provided amply and generously, and we just haven't had to worry about that, and that's been a real blessing to us, and we thank you all for your part in that. I want to talk about the work in the Czech Republic in general, but then more specifically about Prague, where we are. But after I've made some initial comments, I thought perhaps it would be best if you just ask questions. Every place I've been to speak about the work, I've covered different things. And then I leave and I think, there are some other things I really would have liked to have said, but there wasn't time. And I'm not sure that whatever I would choose to say would address your questions. You may be interested in particular people that we work with, or more in the situation with the church in general. There are some things I'd like you to know, but in a few moments I want you to, or at any time for that matter, just raise your hand and ask the questions that you may have. And if my voice holds up and I can kind of break through what I've been fighting, we may try a Czech song here in a few moments. I think Rex passed out a copy to you, and I'll try to lead you in that if I don't fail with my voice. You're probably familiar with what was Czechoslovakia and where it... Now, by the way, now that you know I have a jacket... I'm going to take it off. What was Czechoslovakia until the first of this year is indicated here in this area of the map. But now there's a line drawn here between the Czech Republic as these two provinces or Czech lands, Bohemia and Moravia, are called now, the Czech Republic, and down here Slovakia. And our work, of course, is in the Czech Republic. And the difference, there are great differences between these two, now two nations, in terms of the religious background, their interest, and what it is like to work among the people. So the comments that I would make regarding the Czech Republic, while some may fit the work in Slovakia, there are great differences in the background of the people and what their interests are, and so some would not fit them quite so well. So I'll be speaking about the Czech Republic. You all have the support of others over here. I think you're involved in the support of some that are going to Bucharest. And you know there are some Americans in Budapest. You all have not supported any of those, I believe. And, of course, there are those down in Sofia. Maybe you've had some contact with some of them. But there are Americans in those major cities in the former Eastern Bloc. And then there are some up in Eastern Germany as well. So all but Poland, to my knowledge, and the former Yugoslavia, of the Eastern Bloc countries have some Americans working, even if it's a family or two, some Americans working in them. There is a family now moving up to around the Baltic Sea up in this area as well. But there's a lot of need there and a lot of room for others to come. It's a great population. Prague has a population of 1.2 million. And what we can do in that size population is just like a drop of water in the ocean. We feel very insignificant in what we can accomplish there among all the need that is there. Now to give you a little closer view of the Czech Republic. Here, of course, is Prague. Can you all see this okay? Prague, and the first church that was established there was established by some Americans, Jeff Young. Jeff and Melanie Young were among them. I think you were involved in their support. And that started some 2.5 years or so ago, that initial work, and the church began to grow. And when we went 15 months ago, there were about 35 people meeting there, a mixture of Czechs and Americans. The largest church in the Czech Republic that has been started and influenced by conservative, non-institutional brethren. And today, that church continues, not stronger numerically than it was 15 months ago, but stronger in other ways, which I'll talk about in a few moments. Then there's another church, which has been in existence for several months, down here in a town called České Budějovice. České Budějovice is a town of about 100,000 people, and a young Czech, about 25 or 26 years old, who was on military duty in Prague a couple of years ago, a year and a half ago, was converted in Prague, and then he went back home after his military service was over. Mira is his name, and he has now decided to preach the gospel. And so he lives here, and there have been Americans in the past working in this area. Lonnie and Amanda Oldag, some of you may know, just recently returned to the States after being there. Lonnie was there almost 2 years. And Jimmy and Bobby Smeltzer will go there this spring, this September, Lord willing, to work for at least a year. But Mira and the other Czech Christians there number about a half a dozen or so. Rather small, but the church has been there a while. And so far as I know them, they seem very dedicated and very spiritual in their approach. Then there's a church here, a newer church in the town, if you can see this mark here, in a town called Pardubice. Pardubice is about 80 or 90,000 people. And some Americans went in there on short-term arrangements for 6 weeks or so and taught intensively and converted some people, then left, and other Americans would come and supplement and follow along behind them to shore the group up. And when they started because a young man who lived there was attending university in Prague and was coming to Prague every weekend to worship with us. And so through him, contacts were made with his brother and others, most of them university students, and most of them Jehovah's Witnesses, very zealous and very active Jehovah's Witnesses. And through the conversion of a few of those, and they in turn converting others, there are about 15 meeting there just now. No Americans there full-time, and we know of none that are planning to go there full-time. But some are going on periodic basis to continue the work as they are able. Then there's a young woman who was converted just this past spring up here in a town called Hradec Karlovy. And so the hope is, Stephen Baxley, an American that was working with us in Prague, you may know him from Texas, and he converted her after some others had done some initial teaching. And the hope now is that perhaps a church can be built there through her, but at this time only one Christian meeting in that spot. Here in this town of Brno is the second largest town in the Czech Republic, about 450,000 population. There was a young man converted there about a year ago, a little over a year ago, and then we lost him to the charismatic people. Very strong movement of charismatics in the Czech Republic, and particularly in Brno. So over the summer holidays, we lost contact with him, and he's never responded and shown up with us again. We were very, very sad about that because he was a young man with a lot of talent. We thought we could build something around him. But another young Czech there, Peter, had been taught by some Americans about a year and a half ago who just passed through there, and he continued to study his Bible. And through the personal study and the previous study from them, he decided he should be immersed for remission of sins. And so he asked a friend of his to immerse him. When I met him, which was last April, a year ago, this past April, and I inquired as to his conversion, it seemed to me it was very scriptural. And so I have been studying with Peter, and I go there every Lord's Day after worshiping in Prague, 2.5 hours in the bus to Brno. We worship here. Then I study with other prospects through up until Tuesday morning and go back to Prague. So one Christian there. And then there is a man and wife converted in Prague who have moved back to a little village in this area. And one of the young Czech men, a married man with a child who had been in the correspondence course, Miroslav is his name, first name, lives out here in a little tiny village about here. And he traveled to Prague one day, and he and I studied for several hours, and about midnight he was baptized. He slept the night with us, got up early in the morning, got the bus, and went back. And so we have these scattered individual Christians there that give us reason for great concern, happiness when they're converted, of course, but concern about how to follow up with them. And yet, that's the nature of it. And so we do what we can by mail. That's the general situation. Oh, excuse me, one other. Recent conversion since Marie and I came to the States, here in a city, Olomouc, another 100,000 population city. By the way, in the Czech Republic, there are several cities of 80 to 120,000 in population, which are in many ways remote from the tourist areas and the primary Western business locations. Prague, of course, has many Westerners in it, many Americans there for business. And these places have had little contact with denominational teaching, and they're probably the kind of people that many of us went to the Czech Republic to teach. No preconceived notions, not a lot of error perhaps to unroot, though the Jehovah's Witnesses have made inroads into many of these cities, but not so much as in places like Prague and Brno. And so I feel there's great opportunity in some of those cities. If someone would go there to teach, they might find some very profitable results to their efforts if they went to some of these cities. And there are many others that this map does not show of that general size. Okay, that's a general view of the church situation in the Czech Republic. You have any comments or questions you want to ask about that? Jim? Well, I think what you say is right, but there's one notable difference between this and what happened from Jerusalem. These people who are scattered out there are really babes. They have no background to speak of. Many of them have virtually no knowledge of the Old Testament, whereas in the first century, wherever Paul, for example, went on his journeys to teach, he found Jews that were well steeped in the old law and how to worship Jehovah, who Jehovah was. And they were looking for the Messiah. These people just know very little about the Bible at all. Sewell?
Is it as easy to teach out of the remote areas in English as it is in Prague? You find that many people able to...
Generally, no. But most of these of the size I mentioned have universities there. And so just by virtue of necessity, you gravitate to the university students. Because they're more liable to speak English. And also, because you don't have many Americans there trying to do business, there's not a call for a lot of translators, and so it's easier to get translators. Can't think of his name right now. Wayne Fancher, that was in Pardubice, had several translators from the university who translated for nothing, because they just wanted the experience. And by contrast to my experience, I have to hire professional translators from a firm down here, and they have a pretty fixed rate that they all get together and decide what they're going to charge the market. And so in Prague, it's very difficult to get any translators now. They're just all taken up.
What opposition do you have?
I'm sorry?
What opposition do you have?
In terms of religious opposition or? Well, government, there is very little opposition. I have gotten some of my prospects for studies by going to the metro, that is the subway station, setting up a little folding table and handing out leaflets and offering Bibles to those who were interested and asking for Bible studies. And I was closed down by the police. But other Americans, some have never been closed down. And some others have been closed down by the Metro Authority people. We think that that's not so much the government's opposition, but rather the idea that perhaps that individual didn't like us and he decided to shut us down. But generally, we can go freely and we can study freely with most anyone. In regard to religious opposition, I found, to my surprise, every kind of error that I've ever heard of here and then some in Prague. The people in Prague, the Czechs in Prague, are described by people in Brno, for example, as if I say, how would you characterize somebody who lives in Prague? And they all do this. There's no comment, and I guess that means very sophisticated and very caught up on themselves. When I ask people in Prague, how would you describe people who live in Prague? And they say, So I suspect that's a pretty fair assessment. And that speaks to the idea there are a lot of intellectuals there, and they have spent a lot of time, particularly back under the communist rule, exploring many philosophical notions. A lot of the studies I have are with people who I would classify as agnostics. They have some notion of God. They believe there's some God power, but it's not at all the God we understand. And they have thought through and formulated many questions about how things began. Of course, most of them are evolutionary in their belief, but they have different takes on that, how things began and who God is and how Satan started. And so many of the questions I would get are questions that cannot be answered from the Bible. And I unfortunately have to spend a lot of my time in those kind of discussions. But I've had opposition from denominations, from the Catholics, from the Baptists, from the Methodists. They have a strong group over there called the Czech Brethren, who descended from Jan Hus, one of the early reformers, who was a Czech. From the Hussite Church, which is another branch of descendants, followers of him, and from the evangelical charismatic people, very strong over there. But as I say, I wasn't prepared for many of the things that I ran into in that regard. Another hand up over here.
There's
yes, Rick.
A little town to the right of Prague. Did you mention there are no Americans there?
Pardubice.
Do you think that there's a real need for Americans to go there, or are they doing pretty well enough?
Well, of course, individual judgment regarding that. It is, as far as I can determine, the most zealous of the churches there and the most willing to go out and teach their neighbor. But they're young people, and they have come from a denominational background. They were indoctrinated with a JW doctrine, and they are zealous, and the result is that they can be very dangerous. There has been recently some arguments going on over there about use of the instrument. Some of the strongest of them, with the most influence, believe the instrument can be used in worship, but they've not tried to bring it into the Sunday worship. They will do it in a Bible study in a home, that kind of thing. And there's been a lot of study with them by the Americans who first went in there and then those who have followed to try to get that straightened out. And it really has not been totally uprooted. And one other thought there is that if this church should, let's say, split because of that issue, some of them, of course, don't believe the instrument is authorized. But if it should split, it would definitely, I believe, affect the other churches, because this came out of Prague. This came out of Prague, and the ones in these churches know each other, even though normally Czechs that far apart would not know each other. So I don't see how we could avoid the problem if that problem should get worse. So I believe that there should be Americans there. But some of the Americans who have worked with them apparently have not believed that so strongly. And there has been a move to get these churches to invite Americans to come and work with them. And this particular church is not interested in inviting any Americans to come. Their attitude among these young Czech brethren is that we are self-sufficient now. We don't need somebody looking over our shoulder. Now, to answer your question, though, in every situation, the answer would be different. That church, I believe, needs Americans for some time to come. I think, in fact, all of these churches we'll need Americans there much longer than I first anticipated and much longer than I would really hope. I think that right now, as long as Prague has been a church there and as strong as it is in many ways, I'm not so sure if all the Americans left today, it would survive through the end of this year. Maybe that's too pessimistic. But some of those Czechs, I believe, would give the same assessment, that they just wouldn't last very long. And so Americans need to continue to be there until they can be made self-sufficient. Didn't turn this thing on. You're talking about in Czech Republic or in those?
Specifically here, out of all places that we get into, specifically here, we talk about that American Christians want to be there, but are other nations doing this too?
Well, not to my knowledge, not so much. There's one of the families up here, and it's not on this map, but up in eastern Germany, is from Chile, the Valdez family. But most, pardon? American supported, yeah. Most that I know of are from America. And generally, the Czechs that we're associated with are very appreciative of not only us being there, but also you all. And they often mention in their prayers thankfulness for the folks back here willing to provide for us who are over there. And they frequently express their thanks to us for being there. They recognize that it's very different and that we've given up something to be there. Now, in 15 months there, I've wondered how can I measure progress of the church? What should I look for? Of course, the overall goal that we have is to build a Czech church. And I think if you ask the Czechs in the church in Prague today, what is this, a Czech church or an American church? They would say it's an American church. I think they would say that. Though I believe we've made a lot of progress in the past few months to move it into an area where it would be much, in many ways, is more self-sufficient with just the Czechs. But going back to the New Testament, the early church, it seems to me here are a few, not all, but here are some things that kind of spelled out the reasons for the growth of the early church. They, of course, were devoted to the apostles' doctrine. And they were willing to spend time together. You see that over and over. The early church, people spent time together daily. They studied together. They prayed together. They shared among themselves. They were a family in every way. And then, as was pointed out earlier this evening, they scattered and went everywhere preaching the gospel. And it seems to me, if we could accomplish the same thing, just those three general ideas, that the church then could be considered self-sufficient. I mean, if it could be done without Americans being there to be the prime movers. Now, I believe in those terms some significant progress has been made in the past year or so. When Marie and I went there, our attendance in Prague on Sunday morning was about 35. We got up to about 42, I think, if I remember correctly, the highest attendance that we had. And that attendance, our attendance now is generally 30 to 35. In other words, on the low side of the 35 figure. And I just spoke with David Hartzell, who is in Prague. He and his family now have been there for about 11 months, and they're coming back the 28th of this month, finishing their tour there. I spoke with him today and asked how things are going, and he was rather discouraged because last Sunday there were 19 in attendance in the Prague church. But let's say we have roughly the same attendance. We do have roughly the same attendance now as we had 15 months ago. But 15 months ago, for every Czech, there were at least two Americans in attendance. And today, for every American, there are at least two Czechs in attendance. So while we haven't grown numerically in total, the weight has shifted to the Czechs in terms of attendance. Well, that ripples into other things as well. In the past year or so, we've had the first time a Czech has preached in that church. And we have Czechs now preaching, not every Sunday, but on occasion, in Prague and in Český Budějovice and in in Pardubice, and Peter in Brno has preached probably a half a dozen times just to me. I think he enjoys getting back at me. And we have Czechs leading the singing in more than one in Prague. There are two here. Peter leads singing in Brno almost every Sunday. If he's not preaching, he's leading the singing for the two of us, or maybe a visitor or two we might have. And they are doing the same out in Pardubice. Most significantly to me in Prague, there has been a shifting I'll use the term oversight of the church, though we don't have elders, but a shifting of responsibility for what the church is going to do and who's going to do it and what our plans for the future will be has been shifted to the Czechs in many ways. Now, they still don't have the initiative they need. And let me footnote here by saying that you have to recognize that in light of 40 years of being told when to move this way and when to move that way and when to line up and when to get out of line, it's not, you just don't say, well, why don't you give some ideas for what the church should be doing next year? They're very reticent, and they wouldn't even speak. When we went, they wouldn't speak out in a class. They wouldn't answer a question. The Americans would answer the questions because of the heavy silence that lay over the group. But now, we had no business meetings back then. Now, as of less than a year ago, last August, I believe, we began to have, maybe it was earlier than that, you all were there in August, it must have been a little earlier. So about a year ago, we began to have business meetings. And at first, of course, it was the Americans saying, well, why don't we think about this, or why don't we think about that? And now it is often the Czechs saying, in fact, the last business meeting I went to, Peter Unger, one of the Czechs there who has preached and who wants to be a preacher, he's a young married man, Peter said, you know, brethren, we need to make plans for what this church is going to do. We've talked about another place to meet. We're now supporting Mira down here. The church in Prague provides full support to Mira so he can preach. We're doing that, and I think we need some long-term goals. You know, I was tickled to death in the States when some man would say, we need to look out beyond next week and to think in those terms. And he's pushing to have us make long-range plans. What are we going to be doing down the road a year, two, or three down the road? And he says, we can't make proper decisions today unless we do that. And that's right. That's right. And so that, to me, is a very positive kind of thing. Their contribution has increased. That is, as far as I can determine, the individual contributions of them. They feel more commitment to make contribution. Yet the contribution is largely an American contribution just because we have more money than they do. So there have been many things like that. Czechs have taught the adult Bible class. We have a Czech woman that makes the communion bread and two Czech ladies that take care of putting the communion service up. Two Czechs are involved with handling the money along with me. There's one American and two Czechs that handle the reporting of that kind of thing. We have a Czech who's in effect chairing the men's meeting once a month. And so in many ways, that responsibility has been not so much shifted, but at least they've been made aware of the fact that they're responsible for those things and they have to do those things if it's going to be truly a Czech church. And let me try to relate some of that back to here. I think that has to do with the idea of together and worship. When we went there, it seemed to me and other Americans at the time that the Czechs did not see that church as a family. They didn't think of the church as a church. Their relationship, apart from relationship to Jesus Christ, was to an American who taught them. And if you stood in the corner on Sunday morning when they came into the YMCA building that we rent for worship, they would come and greet the Americans, but they would never speak to each other. And if we had a Czech who came, who was converted, or one who came to visit, and came regularly for several weeks, you would ask another Czech about so-and-so, and they wouldn't know who you were talking about, though we're a very small group. They have a built-in distrust of one another, which I suppose is to be expected because of the communist situation they came from, where their neighbors would tell on them, or their family members would would inform on them. And so today, a lot of progress has been made in that regard, because now I think they do feel like a family, and they often demonstrate that, because you'll find out that two or three Czechs have done something together outside socially, or you'll see them before and after services talking to one another, or you'll hear them in the business meeting discussing the spiritual need of somebody, and they'll even bring that kind of thing up on occasion, though we have much more work to do in that regard. But I think tremendous progress has been made in regard to this. Let me talk a little bit. Any questions? I get to rattle, and you stop me if you want. Yes. Yes, yes. Well, there are, and they're different ones. One great one is morality. Many things about the communist control that were good in terms of, well, crime rate is not high there because the communists wouldn't permit it. Drug abuse was almost unheard of because the communists wouldn't permit it. People don't drive or did not drive while they were drunk. Now, they got drunk. They liked drinking over there. But they wouldn't drive when they were drinking, because the communists wouldn't permit it. So when freedom came, many of those things, that control was taken away, and many of the evils of freedom we have in the West have really gone in there rampant. And however, even back under the communist rule, the idea of, say, sexual morality, for example, was very open. People generally would frown upon someone, a married person, committing adultery, but any other sexual, illicit sex was just fine, accepted by all. And so that affects, we're dealing, not totally, but primarily with younger people, many of them single in this church, and so we've had to deal with that quite a bit. One other point about the growth in the worship that we've seen, we've had two come forward to confess sin publicly in the past few months, which they'd never done before. One of them came forward because of that very thing. He had had an old girlfriend who he'd left when he was converted to Christ, but he needed a place to live, so he went back to live with her afterwards. And then he came forward freely before anybody in the church, as far as I know, knew about it, and he admitted it and did so publicly. So there was a great step of growth in that. But that's something that's quite common. I've written in my report about a lady who's in her 70s with Catholic background who knows what to do to obey the gospel, but she will not because she has a boyfriend who's in his 70s and she's just not willing to give him up. And of course, that kind of thing, as I say, is quite common. Some other obstacles that we have is because these people are young, their parents many times look at us like a sect. We're certainly not as substantial as the Catholic Church or the Czech Brethren. In fact, in the Czech Republic, you cannot identify yourselves as a church unless you have 1,000 members. And we're a long way from being a church. And so they look at us, those who are intellectual, those who are, you know, conscious of where they are in society, look at us as a ragtag bunch, and they don't want their young people associating with us. So there's been that kind of opposition. Anything else? Regarding devoting to the Word, of course, a lot of our time is spent in studying with people. We have Bible study on Sunday morning, and we have a worship service, but we don't meet on Sunday evening. And in the past few months, we've begun a midweek Bible study time, which had never been the practice before. This started last summer, I suppose, last fall. And it's been good. But a lot of the study we do with these people in the church, as well as the prospects, of course, but in the church, almost every member who has continued faithfully from their conversion has been involved in a weekly study one-on-one with somebody who was capable of teaching, essentially an American. And so I have become very concerned about that, I think that ought to be done here. I don't know why it shouldn't be done here. Maybe as a preacher here, I wouldn't want to do it. I don't know. But it seems to me the church here in the States, many times churches are just not as active as they should be. And members are nominal in their faith and their attendance, perhaps. Or they have not really participated in the work of the church. They're not capable of teaching their neighbor with the Bible knowledge that they have. And those things could be overcome if we went back to the same kind of pattern we see in the early church, where they just met one-on-one and they studied the Bible. The people that we would consider faithful in the Prague church have spiritual things upon their mind. Not all the time, but it's not uncommon after worship services to walk up and somebody will ask you a spiritual question or start a spiritual conversation. Far more so than my experience ever has been in this country. We talk about fishing, we talk about what's happening with the Braves, we talk about what we did at the work and so on, but these people will often be talking about some question they have from their own Bible study. And so it seems to me almost essential, if we want to keep these people growing, we cannot do it at the public assembly times. We have to have individual studies with them. And so that has been a large part of our work and other Americans who are there. I try to maintain a schedule of about 15 people a week that come to our apartment. They come to our apartment, by the way, because we have no place, other kind of a place to take them. There's no church building. We rent two rooms from the YMCA on Sunday and again on Wednesday night, one room for the time that we need it. And sometimes we're bounced then because the YMCA has decided they'll have a dance on Sunday morning, and so they'll put us in a back room while they have their dance in our room. It's the bigger room. So we have no place to take people to study. They just come to our flat on our apartment on appointment basis. And because of this idea of they just have to continually be taught, they need a lot of teaching, I have tried in the past few months to emphasize translation of study materials. And I brought this as an example of the kind of thing that has been done. This is the Gospels, a study through the Gospels by Bob and Sandra Waldron. You may be familiar with what they've done, but they've got study booklets that go from Genesis all through what you might call the timeline of the history of God's people. So there's a book after this for Acts, and that's the end of it covers the epistles as part of a study through Acts. This is on the life of Christ, and then all through the Old Testament history there are study books, and we are in the process of translating these and then making up copies. And these have maps and illustrations and things, all of which has to be translated and blown up and reduced. And we need better capability in this kind of thing, because I think, and others have agreed with me, that there's a lot of this that needs to be done. The Czechs are avid readers. One of the problems we have in our classes, public classes, as well as our private studies, is that some Christian there will pick up a book they found in the bookstore downtown, which is very cheap for them, and that's why they read so much, I suppose. They can get that cheaply. But somebody who claims some authority in religious matters will write a book, and because it's in print, they take it for gospel. And I'll study with somebody who brings up a point to me, and then I've got to teach them out of that. And two or three weeks later, somebody else will have that book that's passed to them, and it just ripples through the church, and you're just constantly fighting that stuff. I suppose it's not realistic for me to think that we can translate enough things to keep them busy and keep them away from that. But whatever we do should be a step in the right direction. And so we're translating all of this. Farrell Jenkins gave me approval of permission to translate his theme of the Bible. And I left with a translator in Brno when I came over here. So when I get back, I expect that'll be finished. And the process we go through is to translate it, and then we have to have a Czech who is very knowledgeable in English and also fairly knowledgeable in the Bible to go through and edit it to be sure that whoever the translator was doesn't crank in something that's not doctrinally right. There are two Czech translations of the Bible. One is the Krylitska, which is an old version, which would be comparable to the King James, except that over there it's very unpopular. Here, the King James, even though it's Old English, it has been a quite a popular translation. But there, they don't want to read it. And so, presently, I'm studying with nobody who uses the Krylitska. But there's another later translation, the Ecumenical, which was done by a group of denominational scholars. I guess they were scholars. But that's loaded with different errors. For example, they translated regarding Peter and his confession in Matthew 16, where the two Greek words, one referring to Peter, a stone or a boulder, and the other referring to the confession as the ledge rock, very different word, meaning a different kind of material. The Czechs also have two different words, but they translated both of these to be ledge rocks. Thou art Peter, a ledge rock. Upon this ledge rock I will build my church. And so we have to do extra teaching, and we have to be sure that those things don't end up in here. And so Czechs who speak both languages, and we have some in the church that are very good, have to edit all of this. Okay, any comments or questions here? I'll make a comment about this scattering everywhere. I think this is one of the biggest obstacles we have, though there are some bright spots. I mentioned Mira in Chesky Budyovitsa, who has actually quit his job before he knew that anybody would support him. And then the Czechs in Prague made the decision to support him full time. He's now preaching, but he's heavily involved in studying to make himself a better preacher, more able. And for several months now, every Wednesday, he travels to Prague, where David Hartzell and I would sit and study with him, and we've studied through the Old Testament, and he'll ask questions, things he's come up against when he's studying with somebody and he didn't quite know how to handle. So, and when I go back, Mira and I will be studying through the summer on how to prepare lesson outlines, study techniques, and things of that type. And then Jim Smeltzer will be moving there, Lord willing, in September. And we had a thought that Jim, being capable as he is and as experienced as he is, it wouldn't make sense for him to go to Chesky Budyovitsa, where there's only four or five Christians, a very small church. There are other larger opportunities. But since Mira is there, it was felt that Jim spent his year there and Mira could work with him side by side every day, that at the end of that year, hopefully, Mira could stand alone and we wouldn't have to hold his hand quite so much. Then I mentioned Pardubice and the zealousness of that group there. I can't say much more about that, but they do go out and try to get studies on their own. In Prague, there's a great reticence to do that, and we invite people to bring their friends and their relatives, and some of that's been done, but there's much more that they could do. I don't know how they learned it so rapidly from the American churches, but they did. So it's talked about, but then there's little performance on it. But Peter Unger there, as I mentioned, has decided to preach full-time. And so there is some progress in that direction. We have some resistance there, particularly from one person in the Prague church. When I speak to him about going out to study with people, he says, no, you are supported to do that. You live better than I live, and I must spend my time making a living. So you study with people, you teach people, and I will continue to come and be a part of the church. That attitude is not widespread. That's an attitude Sewell and I talked about before I went over there. It's very difficult to overcome. But you see, they've never had the experience with some Christian who has worked at a job all week and then preached in a church all weekend. I thought of Ray Rutherford, and you know, he's preached and worked and preached and worked over the years and helped many churches that way. But they've never had that kind of example set for them. And so perhaps it's a little understandable they'd feel as they do. So there's a lot more work to be done there. All right. Now, any questions? We've not talked about the lifestyle over there. I've not talked about particular study problems or translation problems we run into. Maybe you're interested. Are you interested in the way our worship goes? It's different than here. Okay, I got some nods on that. Worship is different. It started in the beginning. I think the Czechs initiated this. I'm not sure. It started before we got there. They would come in and put the chairs in a circle in the YMCA, remove all the tables, big circle, and we'd sit in this circle. So when Marie and I first got there, it's 3 dozen people sitting in a circle. And the Bible teacher or the preacher would never stand. He always sat someplace, the translator next to him. So everything was rather low-key, and some could not hear. As we had greater numbers in attendance, the circle just wouldn't work. They couldn't hear. The older people, and me included, couldn't hear everything across the circle. Some of you like to sit in the back. And so we have to constantly fight that to get them to come forward. We don't take up a collection. We have a basket that is sitting there. And everybody understands the first day of the week, the day after the Sabbath. For the Czechs, the first day of the week is Monday. For all of Europe, the first day of the week is Monday. And the ecumenical translation of the Bible I mentioned translates in Acts 20, verse 7, and a couple other places, the first day of the week in Czech. It said the first day of the week. And some have read that to mean Monday. There's a group in Brno, denominational group, that worships on Sunday. Then they all meet on Monday to take the Lord's Supper because they want to do exactly what the Scripture says. But it's because the translation was not done properly for their culture. It should have been translated the day after the Sabbath, which in some places it is. And in the Krylitska, the older one, it's translated in every place that way. Why did I get off on that? Oh, because I said they understand they must give on the first day of the week. Now, we have to be very careful preaching and teaching there that we don't use those kind of phrases. Or if it slips out as it just did with me, you have to back up and explain it because somebody will misunderstand. And there are many other things we have to be careful of in that regard. And recognize we're doing this through a translator always. Our services are always in the language of the person that's leading that part of the worship, and it's always translated into the other language, every part of it. Our song service is almost always done in Czech. But since we have both Czechs and Americans leading prayer and making announcements and presiding at the Lord's table, that kind of thing, it's done in whichever language. Occasionally, one of our Czechs who speaks both languages will do his own translation. If he's leading prayer, he'll pray in both languages. The last time Peter Unger preached, he decided, and with some discussion with Americans, was decided that he ought to just try to go ahead and preach the whole thing without translation into English and see if that would release him to preach better. He did a fine job, an exceptionally fine job the first two times, but the last time, which was the third, he didn't translate. And what he did was he did an outline in English, and that was handed out so we could follow along with the passages and the main points, and he just preached in Czech. The Czechs all said he did wonderfully well, and I can verify that. I understood everything he said. But I suppose he did do very well. On one occasion, he's quite good in both languages, and first time, I think it was the first time he preached, or maybe the second time, one of the other Czechs was going to translate for him, and the other Czech got nervous, and his translation was not good enough, and Peter took over both functions from him somewhere in the sermon. But generally, that's the way that works. In the Lord's Supper, as I mentioned, Melata makes the communion bread, and when the service is conducted, there's a good bit of time spent in comment and prayer. Good attention is paid to that part of the service. And at the conclusion, or when the prayer is made for the fruit of the vine, it's passed around to all the members. Visitors there usually take it as well. Some who visited with us for months, every service, and who understand still take it. And everybody takes the cup, but nobody drinks until The person passing comes back to the front. We all drink together. And he goes back and collects the cups. And I think that's good in our at our size. It gives a feeling of togetherness. And there's a great, I think, in the prayers and things that are said by these brethren, you feel a sincerity of faith that many times in American churches I have wished for, but is fairly commonplace with our brethren. Good thoughts, profound thoughts on the part of those leading prayer. Okay. Our time is probably about up, but I want to sing a Czech song with you, lead you in a Czech song. I had a copy here somewhere. What do I do with it? Is there another one, Rex? Yeah, I know. I don't know what I did with it. Thank you. Got away somewhere. Let's sing the first one here, and you're familiar with the tune, I'm sure. And let me read through the words. Bůh je dobrý is God is good, literally. It translates pretty straight, at least for that phrase. And of course, that's repeated. Bůh je dobrý. They roll the R's, though that's not really necessary. It's kind of natural to them, but they understand if it's not rolled. Then the last part of that, je dobrý ke mě. That's mě. And then the next line is Ježíš je pravý. Literally, that's Jesus is true. I think pravý would be normally translated true, but of course that's the idea of being real. And that's repeated. And then, je pravý ke mě. Watch it on the mě. I love it. Spasil moji duši. The little hook over the S gets a sh sound. In fact, the hook is over many letters, and wherever it is, you have to combine the sound of the letter with the sh sound. And for Americans and even some Czechs, a hook over an R is an impossible sound to make. I can't. I have to really work to try to make it individually. I can never make it in a word with other letters. But we've got one young Czech there, Benny, who can't say it either. Spasil moji duši, and that's repeated. And on očistil mě. And that's not mě, that's mě. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing these right, but I'm close. Then, Veladimeho, ye, dobrý, ke, mě. Okay? My voice is up to this, I don't know. We're gonna try. Bůh je dobrý, Bůh je dobrý. Publish
this new songbook as of last January 1st. It was going to be done well before then. It's not yet done. And so when I go back, I'm going to have to take over what was done and put it together. We have been using a songbook which has maybe a dozen songs in it, and they were the ones initially put together when the church was first established. But now we have probably three dozen or so songs. And so we got enough to be busy learning new ones for a time. But I thought you might be interested in seeing that. Now, I'll mention, too, that I decided this trip not to bring slides. I think there's some advantages to slides about the church and the people and places, but there are some disadvantages. And so we made up some little books here. And I'll just leave them up here. If you're interested, you can come up and look at them. We've tried to put labels on the pictures that have to do with the church. But then there's a book here. One of these has to do with people in the church. That's this one. This one is just scenes of our apartments and scenes around Prague. And they're not labeled, so you're on your own to look at that. And here's a little booklet. When last Thanksgiving, Americans from Prague and from Sofia, Bulgaria, met with other Americans in Budapest, and a place was reserved up on a mountain overlooking the city. And a church in Temple Terrace, Florida, sent cranberry sauce and all the things necessary for a good old-fashioned American turkey dinner. And so we had that, and these pictures were taken. Most of everyone you see in here will be Americans. The only exception is a Nigerian that was baptized in Budapest and had been staying closely with them, Benjamin. And so you might enjoy seeing some of the Americans there, and you may recognize some. Okay, any other questions before I sit down and let... We've not talked about living conditions. Maria would be happy to share some of that with you. We use public transportation. Shopping is very different. Living conditions are different. But I want to thank you again for your kind support, for the many prayers. We get your bulletin. It's sent to us by Darren, and others have sent it on occasion. And they usually come... We'd like to get it every week, but they usually come in kind of a stack, and we drop everything and sit down and read through that to kind of get caught up. And so we appreciate that. We appreciate you. We love you. And we're encouraged when we come here and see the vitality of this group and the good things you're doing in this community. Pray the Lord will bless you in those ways in the years to come.
Thank you, Charlie. I know that those of us here appreciate very much the opportunity to share with you some of these impressions and experiences that you've had. We appreciate your coming to be with us. Charlie's asked if there are questions, and I guess there are not anymore. We're just glad your voice held up as well as it did. That's real good.
We'll answer a question I'm sure will come up. We are going back. We arrived May the 12th, visiting around churches and family. We're going back, Lord willing, on July the 8th. We plan to be there one more year.
All right, one more year. Mm-hmm. You're fine. All right, that's just wonderfully good, and we're thankful that we can have that fellowship. Ronnie, would you lead us? I'll just mention that if Charlie's voice holds up, he's going to preach for us tomorrow, and it certainly was not a problem for us. I hope it didn't hurt you, but you came through real good and clear, no problem at all for us. And we look forward to tomorrow. Bronner, would you lead us in a prayer, please?